Welcome to the Bodice Rippers Romance Novel Podcast, a podcast where we take a deep dive into the world of romance novels, looking not only at the nitty-gritty and sometimes steamy parts of romance novels, but we like to also look at the many different aspects that bring this genre together. We like to look at the authors and looking at their strengths and weaknesses, looking at the process of the authors, and also looking at the historical aspects of romance novels. We're a bunch of nerds, but it's going to be a lot of fun, so get ready.
Hey everyone, we are back with another episode of Bodice Rippers, and I was really missing, like we skipped last week, and I was bummed because I was locked and loaded, ready to talk about.
Ready to go.
Tina Lauren, and now we're here and we're ready to talk about it. So it gave me a little bit more time to read another one of her things. I actually read two books of hers, even though we're talking specifically today about Beautiful Bastard. So,
but there's so many good books that they, because for those of you who don't know, Christina Lauren is a writing duo with their names combined, which is, you know, obviously genius. And if you ever follow them on Instagram, they're the cutest things because they basically like, I both think they're married to other people, but they like love on each other like they're married to each other. So, I mean, you have to like adore the relationship, right?
Okay, I didn't go that in depth with it. I'm so judgy. So like all authors, I take 2 seconds of looking at their feed and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, give me more.
We could help them.
What I'm saying, I'm like, can you just pick more clients and we will take over this shit, because it drives me insane. And this is why, like, I think I've waited so long to try to write anything, because I want to give people what I want, right? I want to know every day how you're putting the story together. I want like the in-depth documentary version, but on social media, of you writing this book. And I would be so committed to reading that book. I would buy like 10 copies and give it to friends. Like, if I watched you build it.
And the problem is, I don't know. And this is a challenge to all authors out there, right? Because I do not know if they're capable of doing both, right? Because I feel like when you're a writer, I feel like every writer's Instagram or social media that I looked at is pretty shitty, right? Like,
it's the worst.
It's the worst. And I'm like, dude, you could just do this so much better. Or I mean, I'm sorry, you make a decent amount of money after you sold your 200th book. So like, hire someone like us.
Why are you not hiring a team? Like, this
is hiring a team. It looks terrible, but I feel like their brain doesn't process it. Their brain is so dialed in on writing and the imagery and the stories and the people that the characters are creating, that they're like, okay, here's my one half-ass effort at a really terrible like Instagram graphic. And you're like, oh, okay, so no.
That sucks. All of it sucks. No, like literally, I'm more excited about documenting writing a book than actually writing a book. Like, the book is almost second hand to me. Like, I'm like, I want to write a book that like requires me to travel. And so I get to go to the places and I get to like do the research. I get to go, you know what I mean? And like, I go and this is research. I have to eat 10 croissants because I have to find the best croissant place in Paris to set my story at. You know what I mean? Like, that to me is almost more exciting to document and share than even the book that I'll be done with.
I feel like this is going to be an inception moment for you, where it's like, I'm going to document writing a book, but my book's going to be about documenting my documentary of the book.
We just went 10 layers.
But I know that your dream, not to freak Joanna Gaines out because you have a slight stalker on your hands, I know your dream is to have Joanna Gaines live stream her entire life.
That's what I want.
24/7. And the thing is, that would go so, I mean, God, if Joanna Gaines wants to make good money, all you do is put up that YouTube channel for a penny and you live stream it, and you have 8 billion pennies that are going to come your way. Because
if all they did was like, hey, guess what? We're going to put a live stream cam in our barn so you can see what our animals are doing throughout the day. I would fucking watch that.
For like the hint of possibly like she's going to walk across and do a cartwheel or some weird ass shit that she does. She just climbed a pear tree the other day on her Instagram. I was like, okay, see, there you go.
Great. People love it. I'm in, I'm committed. I want to know all the things. Tell me. No, yeah. That's how I feel about these stupid authors, is like, can you show me?
No offense to anyone out there, by the way.
Right. Like, no, our show. The reason I'm saying you're stupid, because I am obsessed with you. Like, I want to know more. I love you. I'm committed to you. So show me all the things, like show me your privates.
This is true. So Christina Lauren, both of you, duo, figure it out. Give us a call, whatever you might need, because we can help you. Because
you would never hire us now, because we just talked about shit.
Oh no, now we're in the doghouse, but it's fine.
Now they hate us, but it's fine. But I'm going to do nothing but like give you compliments now. So
Exactly. Also, please come on our show, P.S.
Also, can you come and talk about your writing process?
One or both of you is fine.
I will document it because it is, it's super fascinating. What makes me so fascinated, what I am dying to know about, especially romance novelists, is like, how do you start? Like, are you starting? Like, I feel like if I were to write a romance novel, I would literally have to start with a sex scene first and build from it. Like, in their minds, Beautiful Bastard, let's just give the quick rundown. It really is an office setting, mm-hmm. right? So like, is that where it started in your mind? Were you like, let's talk about two people having sex in an office?
In a hallway, over a corporate desk.
With yeah. a boss.
With like, a boss, right.
Like, was that your inception point? Was that like really where the story started and then you built, because it kind of feels like it is, right? Like that is like a big chunk of it. It's not like this is a beautifully like in-depth rich story of some things and there's some sex in it. Like, no. The whole point is that you're having sex with your boss in an office.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Like, that's very illicitly. Yeah.
Very illicitly. Like I'm talking like the first time I read this, I was up at the cabin, which I tend to read a ton up there. I'm always same. The cabin reading.
The same with you.
The same with me. And I was reading it and I literally was like, damn, this is an HR fucking nightmare. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. HR would be all over your ass. You'd probably be arrested. Like, I think the first yeah. thing you start, and it always starts in such odd ways. It's like, you're telling me your entire office building, an entire floor of a Chicago office building has cleared out in an hour. Like not one person in that office was working late to see you people have sex in this like executive office with open windows.
Or let alone like the custodial staff or, you know, just anyone. The wandering like intern who's there making copies late at night. Like that's
security
not
security guards. Like nobody's working late. Like I've never seen that in my life where there's like, it's literally nobody there and it's fine to like completely have sex in an office.
Right.
And secondly, with your freaking boss. And that, I think to me, that brings us to kind of my big beef with this story mm-hmm. is that like I cannot identify with a person that would be attracted to someone who is terrible to them.
Ooh, yes, good point.
I don't find that attractive. Like in the book, it starts off with this boss who's a complete and total ass, right? He's like mean and spiteful and hateful and condescending to his employee. And I'm like, I wouldn't so much work there for 2 days. Let alone want to have sex with you.
Right.
I don't care if you look like Thor.
I don't know. I mean, Chris Hemsworth is like my top five celebrity sleep. So
Me too. I like my, you know, my Siri on my phone is basically Chris Hemsworth. It's an Australian man. I changed it. But like, I wouldn't even be in that working environment.
Yes, but I think the point is, the counterpoint to it is that she's kind of awful too in the first one. Like she's a little bit vindictive. She's got a little bit of an edge to her. I mean, she's also, I mean, I think this was the brilliance of how they wrote the book too, was like, she was not, it wouldn't have worked if she'd been super meek and super docile. Like she was also like pretty edgy, pretty like, yeah, I'm going to fuck you in a hallway stairwell kind of thing, you know, and like leave my panties with you every time or whatever. Like
that is a whole point of contention we need to talk about, because this, I literally had a conversation about this literally outside just an hour ago with Misty, which is so weird. But like, I'm wearing a jumpsuit. You can't tell because obviously. And she's like, what are you wearing under that jumpsuit? I'm like, a swimsuit, basically. Like what, you know, whatever. And she's like, oh, I thought you were just like not wearing anything under that. I'm like, I can't not wear anything under anything.
What, not going commando. You're just.
No, like I've had 6 children. I cannot not wear underwear.
You like, got to keep the things and the lady the parts up and together.
Exactly. And so, and then like the idea of working through a full work day, sweating,
right.
moving around, having whatever bodily fluids decide to come out of you that day.
A little pee every now and then, you know, little stuff.
Yeah. So many things that could be happening. And you're going to leave dirty underwear that you've worn all day with a person that you're attracted to, let alone a person who's a complete and utter asshole. It makes no sense to me. Like,
no, it doesn't, but it worked for that storyline. It worked for that storyline.
Yes. But I just don't understand it. I'm like, I can't identify with any of this. Like the idea of someone being at a con, like the Beatles, I think about the Beatles when I like read these things, it's like the Beatles had women's underwear with whatever was happening in those women's bodies at the time, coming at their faces in droves. Like if you were a female singer and someone put up like some boxers with a whole bunch of like semen on them and threw them at your face, that would be assault.
Right.
But it's cool.
Right. It's totally fine for us to do that to men.
Like all of that makes my skin crawl.
I don't disagree with you though, because I think too, if people haven't read this series, so Christina Lauren, this pair has written a ton of books. They have a few series, but this is like their primary one. Then they mostly do standalone books, right?
Yeah.
And this one follows, again, the same kind of interweavings that all romance novels do, in the sense of like, they start off with a couple and then those couple have friends and then all those friends, you know, kind of interweave into each other's lives.
Okay. So I'll be honest, I didn't read the whole series. Like, I've only read Beautiful Bastard because the other ones were just not on. And I felt like there was almost two tangents you could go on.
Yeah. Well, what they did is they have the main primary series line that happens. And then they have a shit ton of novellas off to the side for like each one, because then they go through like, so like with these two, it's Chloe and Bennett, right? In the first one. And then they have that. And then they go on to the second series. But in between that, they go on to like where Chloe and Bennett go to France and they get engaged and then blah, blah, blah. And then another mini novella that talks about them getting pregnant. So like, it is kind of a confusing map. And then they go kind of further afield, because I read one later on in the series where like one of the characters comes from the UK and she connects with one of the characters in the US. But like, I'm actually unsure still to this day of like how that US character, the male protagonist, connects to everybody else.
I see.
So there is a little bit like spin out that's happening too. I read most of them. I have a favorite, but the thing that I thought was really interesting, because I had read other Christina Lauren's before this, was that
did you read The Honeymooners?
I did read The Honeymooners. Didn't love it.
Didn't love it either.
Yeah, no, didn't love it, to be honest. I'll tell you which was my favorite Christina Lauren book, but I like some of her standalones, but what's really interesting is that some of them are very serious. Like, some of them are very like there's some heavier undertones, you know, to what they're talking about. And then they have a lot of fluff as well. Yeah. But the thing that caught me off guard with this, because I had read some of their other books, was again, that first initial like three pages of the Beautiful Bastard series and the sex scene where it's pretty rough, like on the conference room table. And I literally was like, am I reading a different author? Like, cause this is so not how they usually start off. It was
I read Honeymooners first and it was like a year ago. And it was like, it's like a beach read. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's like, fine. It's good. It wasn't, nothing was wrong with it. It was just like, not, you know, it wasn't as memorable, you know? And then you told me about this series and I was like, wait, these are the people that wrote The Honeymooners?
Yeah, this is the problem I had. And then, okay, so I'm gonna jump ahead. My probably favorite book from them is, it's called Autobiography, right? Mm-hmm. And it's an LGBTQ focus, which is really interesting, right? Because they're two women writing about it. And then the storyline is that they're focused on two male protagonists, and one is a gay young high school guy, and he moves to like Provo, Utah, or one at Salt Lake, somewhere in there, Provo, I think, from LA. Falls in love with another boy at his, who's kind of just graduated from his school, but he's like the son of like a deacon in the Mormon LDS community that's really high up, right? They don't believe in that, right? And so it's actually a really touching, like heartfelt, very interesting. I don't know, this and like red, white, and royal blue, which we're going to talk about later on in the series, some of my all-time favorite books. So I'm like, am I just a 17-year-old boy like that hasn't like, hasn't come out yet? Because I love these stories. And that one is one of my all-time favorite, Red, White, and Royal Blue. But it was this really touching, very different kind of approach. And coming from two, you know, women who are writing this book and trying to really highlight sort of the difficulties and challenges of being gay in the, you know, LDS community kind of thing. So a pretty big departure from something like this. I don't know if Beautiful Bastards was just during a time that they're like, we just want to write about a lot of sex and thin, kind of a thin storyline, right? Kind of through all of them. And then we're going to like, we just need a break. Maybe we just needed like an author break. And then we'll get back to like regularly scheduled programming later down the line. I don't know.
Yeah. Cause it definitely, this is one of the few books that I've read. I feel like most of the things I read have a more rich plot line to it. This definitely feels like we're here for the sex and there's things that happen in between. Do you know what I mean?
Like, because back to your earlier question, I think for me, like if I was a romance novelist, I would actually start with the plot line and the imagery and all of that and the storyline. Right. And then I would figure out how the sex fits into it, right? Whereas I think they did the reverse here where it was like sex, 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 little storyline, conclusion. And you're like,
and it was literally almost like, okay, here's the setting. Like I can honestly see it as like a marketing meeting where it's like, we're in an office. Yes. We're having sex with our boss. Go. Who has an idea? And one person's like, the stairwell. One person's like, his desk. one person's like in a dressing room at a lingerie store, which that is illegal. No one do that. I worked at a Victoria's Secret and that would have ruined everyone's day.
I feel like most of the places they're having sex in public places are illegal, or like fondling over under the table at the Chinese restaurant, you know, kind of thing.
Who does that? Like literally, this might be going a little TMI. I don't know, but I feel like my husband knows that I'm just not into it. Like we've had sex in a public place before, like out in the wilderness. And the whole time I was like, red alert. Like I was like, who's coming around? What is that noise? Someone's coming. So it's not like calming. It's not enjoyable.
Not a great orgasm for you either, because
I'm like, hurry. Someone's coming. So it's not fun because I'm just like, oh my God, we're going to get in trouble. Like someone's going to come out, like come out here. We're going to be killed. All the things. So I'm like, I would never enjoy that. Like being in a lingerie store and thinking that someone was going to come in or you're going to get arrested or any of that. None of that sounds fun.
Really, I think that's what they're writing to, right? Is the fantasy of it, you know, as well. Yeah. There's one that's later on. I don't know if you haven't read the rest of the series, I think it's like their third or fourth book, but the couple actually, or it's the second book, I think. He has connections to like the sexual underworld, let's call it, kind of thing. And you can actually go to this club that's sort of like lower Manhattan or whatever, it's underground, and you can rent a room and then you can actually have sex in that room while people watch, right? And walk by and all that sort of stuff. And so it's total like fantasy run amok gone wild, because I mean, we've had this conversation before on this podcast where I don't know if any of our, like, we have mutual friends, we have other friends,
right?
I don't even know if there's a percentage of those people that would be like, yes, let's do that. I'm comfortable with that. I have done that. And maybe
I'm just sheltered. Who knows? We're
just sheltered. Because other people who are listening to this podcast are going to be like, bitches, please. We do this all the time.
Yeah.
Everywhere publicly.
I'm sure there's people that love having sex in the wilderness. Like, I'm sure that is so fun to some people, but it is so just not enjoyable to me. And maybe all of this is great. Maybe you would love to have sex with an asshole for that you work for. I couldn't even work there for a 24-hour shift. But some people can hack it and love it.
But again, that's why they didn't write you, right? They didn't write your character, because this character, Chloe, she freaking like gets off on it and does herself in that. Remember the scene where she's in the office, shuts the door, he's on the phone, and she's doing herself for him. And you're like, okay. Midday, little midday tea and crumpet break, it's fine. You know,
like, now you have to go make calls.
Right. And now you're gross. And it's just like,
yeah. That is one thing too that I will say in books that has always frustrated me, is like the logistics of all of it is just so unlikely. You know, like it's like those books like Outlander, right? When they go back in time and you're like, but you still have your period and you still have to poop and you still have the thing. You know what I mean? It's like no one addresses those things. So like same thing. It's like no one's addressing that. There's like a mess.
Right. And it's all very pristine.
Yeah.
And it's all like, unless they're writing specifically the character that is like the drunken mess or whatever kind of thing. But yeah, for the most part, these people don't eat, they don't sleep,
they don't sweat, they don't smell.
Oh, and let's talk about the fact that like her clothes are amazing and like she can run down, I'm assuming it's like 26 flights of stairs and like 6-inch heels. Like that's also not realistic. Like no woman can do that.
And also this is not to knock secretaries. I'm sure that in New York, I'm sure people love it, but you're telling me that you can wear La Perla lingerie and you can wear designer clothing, even on a discount.
Right.
Awesome. You cannot. And then actually pay rent.
Right.
Like that, none of this is believable.
And I feel like she had her own place too. Cause like I had a friend who used to live in Manhattan and she was sharing an apartment with 6 other people and she didn't have a room. They had she had a sheet hanging from the wall in the corner kind of bullshit. And she was still paying $1,500 as her share. For 6
my people. Best friend, same exact thing, that lived in Brooklyn. And I was like, someone's literally living in this room and all they have as a wall is like a folding Chinese screen.
Right. Best of luck. <That's> room.
Like they couldn't even cook in their kitchen because they used it for storage. Didn't cook there. Like it was a whole thing.
I would agree with you. Like there is, so because it's funny because and a lot of times this happens in romance novels too, where there is the there might be a struggle, or you see this person potentially, if the storyline and the plot line's thicker than this is, that they're going through something, but at the same time they're going through something, they still have all these wonderful, unless you're writing the storyline of like the single mom who's literally not making ends meet and her kids are starving in the street kind of thing, which does happen, right. But like,
it's like part of the plot,
but for the most part, you have all these women who are struggling, but at the same time, yeah, buying La Perla lingerie. And then the man is ultimately like super wealthy, super powerful, and she's trying to like rise to the occasion. And you don't often see the opposite happen, right? In terms of that plot twist.
Which I find super interesting, because I want to say 100% of the writers that we're going over this season are women. So yes. Like, why are we always writing about this same shtick?
Right.
Like wealthy men and women that are like rising up to the occasion.
There's a few I've read where it's the roles are reversed, but it is not many. It is always the guy who's in that traditional kind of role. I will say, not to segue too much, but I do enjoy, from what I understand about their writing process, and I could be wrong, but this is what I've read about them, because they're two authors, right. They each take a voice. And so, and if you notice, like in most of their books, chapters alternate between the male and the female for the most part.
Yes, I did. And I actually do like that. I think that's pretty interesting. I didn't like the whole Stephanie Meyer's Twilight thing where she came out with the story with mm-hmm. Bella as the main character, and then she came out with a whole other book, which is the same exact thing, but like in the other person's viewpoint. I'm like, ugh, I already know what happened. Oh,
whatever her name is, who wrote James, who wrote 50 Shades of Grey, she did that too. She wrote another book that was like from Christian's point of view. It was just one. I don't think it was the three.
No, I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, that's stupid to me. I don't know why.
I don't love that. I like their back and forth, because I think what happens, again, I could be wrong, is that they write, so one of them, Christina, writes chapter one, sends it, then Lauren reads chapter one, writes chapter two. And right. So they have this like back and forth. And if you read their like, you know, acknowledgements at the end kind of thing, it is very sweet, because some years it's like, Christina, you carried this. Like, I was not in my writing group. And like, yeah, right. So it's like this really nice acknowledgement of the other person, but also it's like, you know, it's an equitable share, but sometimes somebody's just writing better than the other person is, which is awesome.
Yeah, I love that. And that's like a thing that I would love to do and approach writing is like, I think a lot of people that I speak to that want to be writers, right? And myself included, I'm not a fucking writer. I would love to be, but I'm not. But I think they're like waiting to find their like white whale, you know, and they like, instead. And for me, I've always been this way. I'm much more of a science experiment person where I'm like, I would love to try, you know, I my cousin who loves to be a writer, she's done so much research on people's writing styles, and she's like trying to feel like find her one, like her favorite one to do, or like find her own. And I'm like, why not try all of them? Like, right. I would love to write a book that's like that. Like, you do a chapter and I do a chapter and you do a chapter and I do a chapter, and then do one where it's like, okay, let's just collaborate and sit together and write it together. And then let's do one where it's just me. And that, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I would love to experience that, like all the different methods, and just see what works the best.
And I think too, once you start in that vein, and I think that's, and this is a bigger conversation, but that's always the problem too, right? Because we talk about this with podcasting as well. It's like, people who want a podcast are right. You just have to start. Like, that's the biggest haul. Like, you just have to start. Once you start, it's going to be like, yeah, your first book versus your fourth book is going to be immeasurably better kind of thing. But I think once you get into that vein too of writing, you meet other writers, and then you start to get that real intimate feedback, because you'll see in their acknowledgments as well, like they have pretty big names who are reviewing what are fairly, not easy, but fairly light to read, you know, kind of books. And it's like, they have, again, obsession with Sarah J. Maas. They have Sarah J. Maas as a counter reader, you know, kind of thing. They have these big names who are reading. And then you're like, okay, now you're friends with these people who, like, now you're emulating, maybe you're taking a little bit of their writing style and they're taking a little bit of your writing style, or they're like, hey, this suggestion would be great here. So like, I think that starts to be born more down the journey of being a writer.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a very interesting vein where it's almost like it takes a village to raise a book as much as a kid, right?
Yeah.
Your books are going to take on personality traits of all the people that help you, whether that's your editor or whether that is your mom who read it for the first time and was like, this fucking sucked, let's do something different, you know? Like, I think that it's probably never happens really as someone who writes a first edition and it's like, that's it, I did it, here's my badge of honor for doing it by myself, you know?
I feel like J.K. Rowling may be the only one who ever did that when she was writing on napkins in the cafe kind of thing. But by the time she got to book two, you're so well supported because it's so popular, you know, at that point. But I think book one may be a real solo endeavor until you get picked up, until you get that team. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's really a crapshoot, because you know who we've talked about before, TJ Klune and the Cerulean Sea, right? He wrote prolifically for a long time, switched publishing houses to his current publishing houses probably not that long ago. And now he's like a New York Times bestseller, which he was not. So it took that switch. It took that transition. And I'm not sure if it's entirely his new publishing house, but it kind of seems like it's that too.
Right.
So yeah, it's really interesting journey. And I would think you'd want to have a group of people to support you. Cause again, I think writing can be very, very lonely.
Oh, for sure. But yeah. I think it's also something that, people see the accolades and it's very easy to be like, my goal is to write a New York Times bestselling author, instead of the goal just to be like, I have these stories that have to come out of me, and whatever happens, happens, but I'm going to write every day because I'm a writer. Yeah. And that's what writers do. Like, yeah. And be passionate about that. I think that is probably the easiest way to become a New York Times bestselling author. And this is from no personal experience whatsoever, but it just seems to like energetically align so much better than being like, I just want it to be good. It's like, what is good? Do you like it? Were you happy? Did it fill your soul to get this story out of your body and onto paper? Well, then it's good.
Well, and it's like, yeah, the questions are good to be asking yourself. Yeah. Do I want to be a New York Times bestselling author? Maybe, but like, who are you serving in the interim? Like, what's the purpose? It's like a lot of writers, it's their story they want to share so they can help other people or they can build that community piece. Mm-hmm. I think that's right. I think it's the approach is so important. And I loved, so Glennon Doyle, who wrote, you know, Untamed, massively popular, all that sort of stuff. Somebody asked her like, you know, what's next? What's the next book or whatever? And she said, you know, I don't know, this may be it. Like, I may just have written the best thing I'm ever going to write. And that's okay. You know, I'm sure she's going to do other stuff. Now she has a children's book adaptation coming out of it, I think. But for her to recognize, like, maybe I'm, and there are plenty of people who are a New York Times bestselling author multiple times.
Right.
But there's some people who are like, no, I had the one, like, and it was, I birthed it and like, that's it. And I'm okay with that. Like, that was what I was meant to do in this time I have on this planet, you know, kind of thing.
I listened to a podcast a long time ago with Oprah, and I don't know how I'm going to say his name, right? Paulo Coelho. Is that his name? Mm-hmm. The guy that wrote The Alchemist. And she had interviewed him because he wrote another book later on. And she was like, were you so nervous to write this? Because The Alchemist was such a huge hit. And he was like, well, number one, The Alchemist took years to become what it is now. Like, that thing was published for, I think, almost a decade until someone picked it up and it finally became like the phenomenon that it became. But he was like, but I didn't ever set out to top it or to even have that same success or even to write even the same book. He's like, I knew that that's going to come probably once in a lifetime, but that doesn't mean I have nothing else to say, even if it's never as popular. And I was like, that is so impressive to me that someone that will recognize, like, I'm just doing this because this is what I'm meant to do, not because I need it to be bigger than the last or as big as anything else. It's like, this is just the story I have to tell right now. In this moment.
I love that. And on like a personal note with that. So my husband, you know, Eric, he just got back from a shamanic healing camp, right? And he was gone for 7 days. Oh yeah, I didn't tell you this. So he's gone before and he went again. And it's, I mean, one of the kind of top shamans in the plant spirit medicine world. He's off grid for 7 days, the whole thing. And he was talking to the guy, you have healing sessions every day, but this shaman was saying, you know, your calling, whatever that may be, whether that's to do music, to be the writer, to live a yogic lifestyle, whatever it is, which, you know, doesn't necessarily equate with your job, right?
Right.
Your calling, that thing that literally calls to you, fills your soul, pumps your blood. Like, if you don't honor that, if you do not follow that, and it does not mean your calling is going to be successful, right? It doesn't mean you're going to be famous. It doesn't mean you're going to make a lot of money. He's like, but if you do not follow that calling and live that kind of calling life, he's like, you become ill. You know, you physically become ill, you spiritually and emotionally come ill. And I feel like that's a thing for people who are writers. And even if you identify as a writer later on in life, there's mm-hmm. that thing inside of you that says, I have a story worth telling. I got to get it out. I don't care if one person reads it, or if a billion people read it, like it just has to come out. So it's like, it's like us as a society somehow have to shut out all the external noise, of which there is so much, to be like, okay, how do we listen in? How do we tap in? And how do we say, what's my calling? And then how do I let that just come out for the pure purpose of when I follow it, I live that joyous life, you know, and get out there. So I think writers have that. I know the struggle is real, right? The struggles with writing is really real.
That doesn't mean it's easy.
doesn't mean it's easy. And every author you ever talk about talks about, like, you know, writer's block and how boring it can be sometimes and how lonely it is and how you're creating characters in your head that nobody else can really see because they're in your head.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, but you can't walk away from it, right? Like, it's what you're meant to do, kind of thing.
And which brings us kind of full circle is, like, even though that Beautiful Bastard, I didn't identify with the storyline or really even the sex scenes, like, it's fun to read for sure. Like, I'll read about someone having sex in a freaking dressing room. I don't
have sex scale for this one. I would say is past a 10.
Oh yeah. I would definitely say it's a 10. I feel like, I don't know that I want to read a 10, an above a 10. Like, maybe it would make me feel uncomfortable. Like, anything that's more than this kind of verges on things where I don't know a lot about that world and I don't know that I could handle it this moment in my life. So I'm good with where we're at.
This is pretty maxed out, though. I would say out of almost everyone we read for this first season,
yeah,
this is probably the most
like graphic for
most
sure.
Most graphic. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, not my most favorite, because again, like, I would not identify with or want any of these things to happen in my reality, but like, definitely graphic. Like, I know exactly what happened. I can picture it right in my brain. I can see it right with my own eyeballs, the way you wrote it. And so I will say that even all of that, even though this wasn't like the richest story, in my opinion, this wasn't like my choice of fantasies, whatever. You still have to totally commend these women for like putting it out, like, one thing that you have to think about when you're a writer that is in this genre is like, your mom could read this.
Like, your dad, I'm sorry, your dad would be worse. Your dad would be reading this.
Literally, one time, we tried to play Cards Against Humanity with my dad and my mom and my husband and my brother and my sister-in-law. And the first question, brain's like, say it. I'm like, I'm done playing this game. I can't even say that word in front of my dad. So we're not playing this anymore. Like,
which I love, because like, you and I are both in our late 30s at this point, and like, you think at some point we would be okay to say certain words in front of our fathers, but no,
it's just... no, I'm just not going to talk about oral sex in front of my dad. I just can't, like, I simply won't do it. So,
but he's going to hear this podcast now.
No, he's not. He's never listening to this. I refuse to even tell him this exists. So, which, okay, no, this is a weird tangent, and I'm going to just tell you about it because it is the funniest shit of my life. So, my dad, he is really funny. Like, he's super conservative, engineer, half Native American. Like, he's very stoic, but he's actually closet so funny. Like, everyone growing up thought like my dad was just a serious, scary person, but he's actually just the funniest person ever. So have you ever seen Sex Education on Netflix?
No, I know of it, but I haven't watched it yet.
It is so good. It is like one of my favorite shows of all time. And it is a rich, beautifully written, hilarious, hysterical story. It's so good. It's like his favorite show. So like, I watched it. I told him about it. He watched an episode and then it's been hooked. And so he like binged the whole first season. The second season came out, binged that, and then is rewatching the first to rewatch the second. And he like talks to me about it. He like plays clips like for me. He's he's a researcher. So he like finds all the music from every episode and like discovers the bands that play and discovered that one of the bands was in an episode about the prom. Like, he is the funniest person. And I was like, he was showing me one of these clips one day. It was like 2 weeks ago. And I was like, Dad, you and I should start a podcast like commenting on episodes of Sex Education. He's like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I was like, what? He's like, that's the stupidest thing. Like, who wants to listen to somebody talk about it? I'm like, I just listened for 20 minutes about you talking about this stupid episode. Like,
great. And a bunch of people would listen to that.
Yeah. He thinks podcasting is the stupidest thing he's ever heard of. And I was like, okay, cool.
Oh, you're the one. You're like, by the way, Dad, so we produce podcasts. We don't even have our own, but we produce them because we're such nerds about them.
Right. We are obsessed with them. So thanks for being a dick about it. But
all right. Well, so yeah, don't tell them about the Bodice Rippers romance novel podcast. It's a mouthful, but we're here.
we're here and we're ready for people to listen.
Oh my God. Okay. So we're going to skip over favorite characters, I feel, because you only read one. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us what you're reading now.
Oh, okay. So I'm in my annual Night Circus vibes. Like, every year on Halloween, I read the Night Circus. I actually sent Nina, our podcast producer, the audio version of it, which is actually, the audio version is not my favorite. The narrator that they picked is an old British man, and it's just not what I hear in my head. So it kind of threw me off when I first started listening to it. And I'm like, this is not for me, but I am obsessed. So I feel like, what's her name? Why can't I think of her name?
Erin Morgenstern, is that?
Erin Morgenstern. She's probably my favorite contemporary writer. Her stories are so beautifully written. It's like a tapestry of just is gorgeous. Her words are gorgeous. Her imagery is gorgeous. Like, I love it. And I just especially love it in this season. Halloween every year, I love reading The Night Circus. And I'm actually thinking of reading it aloud to my kids just to see what they think.
Oh my gosh, I would love that.
I know. They probably will hate it, but I'm going to give it a whirl.
You're like, I birthed you, so you're going to at least try this for 20 minutes.
I literally tried to make them listen to the poem of The Raven last night over dinner, and they just shut the fuck up and listen to it. So I was like, I hate you guys. I will listen to it myself because I just like getting in the spooky mood, you know? Yeah. So totally my jam. And then I actually just did a quickie. So fun fact, my library card expired, so I wasn't able to get a bunch of books like for like 2 weeks. And I finally went to the library on Friday and just like renewed it. And so now I have 11 books. I literally just like burned through one last night, stayed up till 3 a.m. because I needed to burn through this Nora Roberts Brazen Virtue that I had to read.
I mean, it probably only took you like 2 hours, so it's fine.
It took me like 2 hours. It was fine. But yeah, I have like so many things. I actually put the Game of Thrones, all the books they're in my library right now because did you see that the preview for the new prequel came out?
I saw that it did. Yeah, I haven't watched it yet, but I saw it. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's going to be so good. So
you're going to be happy for a long time then.
Oh, I'm in it. So I'm really excited. Once I finish The Night Circus and all my Halloween books, I'm going to get into Game of Thrones.
Oh my God.
This probably could be put in this podcast because
I did not watch the series because I got to like, I know I'm like one of two people who's not watched it. What? I got to like episode 3 and I was like, eh.
Oh my God. As somebody who loved all of the Jennifer Armentrouts and stuff, like.
I know. I'm a huge fantasy sci-fi like nerd and I just could not, I don't know what it was. And I know what happens at the end now because everybody wouldn't shut up about it. So it's like, what's the point? You know, I know what happens. So.
Oh, hell, I cannot believe you didn't read
that. But I would be totally game to read the books. So we could totally, we'd have to do a whole podcast series on Outlander and Game of Thrones.
100%. Outlander, I could talk about for years. Yes. So good. I need to reread all of those. So yeah, that's what I'm reading. What are you reading?
Okay. So I'm in the middle of a couple as well. And it's funny because I'm in the exact opposite position where like I read through all of mine and my Kindle's actually a little empty right now, but that's okay because I'm in a self-learning mode. So my reads at the moment might be a little bit strange, but I am in the third novel of Edie Dunmore, who we're going to talk about her later in the series. Portrait of a Scotsman. That's her third one that's come out. So that's a romance, historical romance novel. It's so cute.
So excited to get into those.
They're so cute. I'm loving it so far. So I'm in the middle of that one. And then I'm also reading, cause you know, I'm a Reiki and practitioner and yoga instructor. So I'm reading right now, Crystal Healing for Reiki Practitioners. So it actually talks about the crystals you can utilize, like I know a little bit about it in your Reiki session, but also actually self-healing for me, because when I give a Reiki session, it takes a lot from me kind of thing. Totally. So I bought a book on that. And then I'm also reading a book called Lunar Abundance, because I'm wanting to be more familiar with, right? I'll pass it to you when I'm done. It's like both of these I can give to you. Cause you got a lot of woo that's happening on this podcast. Yes. But yeah, it talks more how to work with the cycles and, just your own like personal self, like healing and transformation. So I was like, that's going to be exciting.
So interesting. On that note, yesterday when I went to my therapy session, my therapist told me about the Magdalene manuscripts. Have you ever heard of that?
Ooh, no.
I'm going to buy it and I'm going to read it and I'm going to pass it to you because I have nothing to talk about it yet. But once I read it, I'm actually really interested in it. Because she hinted at sex magic. And I'm like, what is that? She's like, read this book and then you'll get a little bit more, you know, it'll be like your first toe dip into what that means. Cause I've heard people like reference that, just kind of being more aware of like the astrology and the spiritual side and like all of these new things that we're doing. And I've heard even at retreat, I had one of the women that I was at retreat at mentioned it too. And I was like, what is that? And
I love
apparently
that.
Magdalene manuscript is like, they go deep into it. So
yes, read that and then we can swap. We'll exchange.
It'll be good.
Oh, good. So good.
Perfect. All right. So next week we're going to be bringing in Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Have you read it yet?
No, I have it in my holds. So I'm hoping if I don't get it by like Friday, I'll just get it from
Yeah.
Whatever it's called.
I actually bought the, which I don't have it right now. Otherwise I'd give it to you because a friend has it, but I bought the paperback because I loved it so much. I wanted the actual like book.
So I'm going to just like put this out here on this podcast episode, but I would love to buy all of these books like paperback and do like Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, but books. Like yes. So any of our listeners that want to actually read this, we should do some sort of like book swap thing where it's like, check it out from our Bodice Rippers library and then mail it back when you're done. And then we'll send it to the next person. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, I love that. Let's do that. I think yeah. That'd be great because yeah, this is one I had to buy as a paperback and just saw that it's getting put into a movie.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. That's yep. So cute. I love that. Yay. Yep. I'm so excited. Okay. Next week, we'll be here to talk about it.
All right. Thanks guys.
Bye guys.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Bodice Rippers Romance Novel Podcast. We are just so completely delighted that you guys are tuning in and listening to all things romance novel related, as well as all things in a completely different tangent. We're here for big conversations, small conversations that are on topic and off topic. Please, 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 if you have a second, just rate, review, subscribe, leave us a note, leave us a message. It just really helps us in the podcasting world as we pretty much want to be doing this full time because we just love chatting about all things romance novels and talking with all of you guys. So if you have a quick second, let us know how we're doing. And of course, if you have any feedback, just pop us a review and let us know what we could do better, could do worse, or could do more in a hilarious fashion. And until next time, you guys, get out there, read those romance novels, and let us know what are your juiciest takeaways. Talk to you soon.